He admitted that he's had sex with over 100 different bodies. Only female. He's not a fag or anything.
What the f***?
No, it's okay. On this show, you can say fuck.
Well, last week we couldn't figure out what I was doing on a Saturday night, but we knew what I was doing on a Saturday night. But, on the other hand, did we ever find out what Kat was doing on a Saturday night?
Probably watching anime.
Well, we'll be talking about your city later, or you're really close to Ferguson. That'll be coming up later. I want to do the fun, dumb stuff first, which is why we're introducing Charlie.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
I tip my sombrero to thee.
So let's get the fun, dumb stuff out of the way first. Let's start with this week's...
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Did you guys read about the man who died trying to forcibly sodomize a donkey?
Only because you made us.
Yeah, I chose not to.
Oh, so you guys wouldn't have read about the Lebanese man who had a donkey tied up and splayed to the front of his car, and it kicked him to death while his pants were down, so the authorities could only surmise that he was trying to rape the donkey when it kicked him to death. You wouldn't have read about that if I hadn't have sent it to you?
Not of my own volition.
No, I made the... You sent me that, I read the headline, and I made the choice to not read it, because maybe there's a heaven, maybe there's not, but just in case.
Although, to be honest, man dies trying to fuck donkey is probably all you need to know you get from the headline.
Yeah, they really kind of buried the lead.
They found a Saudi man dead, kicked to death by a donkey, and they found the donkey in that position. His pants were around his ankles, his underwear was off, and he was all alone. So I don't blame the cops for going, yeah, that's probably what happened, huh?
Can you just imagine that poor man's family? Like, when you get the call from the cops or whoever, and they have to come to your door, and they're like, we just found your husband, he's been killed. And then they have to say, by a donkey that he had strapped to a car that he was trying to fuck. How do you break that gently to somebody?
I think the worst thing would be if they went, again?
Oh, man, it killed him this time?
I told him this was eventually going to get him. Eventually.
I think this could all just be a Larry David-esque misunderstanding.
Like a comedy of errors?
Yeah,
exactly. Yes, like he was masturbating.
He missed while the donkey was standing and he was under.
Yeah, he was fucking that donkey.
Instead of fucking a donkey, how about the Hamilton County, Ohio morgue worker who admitted to having sex with over 100 corpses? Is that better? Kenneth Douglas of Hamilton County, Ohio, he worked in the morgue. He was recently arrested for having sex with 3 different bodies. During his interview, he admitted that he's had sex with over 100 different bodies. Only female. He's not a fag or anything. He only had sex with female corpses, though.
I mean,
he wants
no homo.
You to know that. He's not a fag. Just a necrophile. They actually had to find him through a sting operation. I don't know how you sting that, but apparently there was semen found in some of the corpses, so they thought, something illicit's going on here. Let's see what's going on. They first noticed something was weird when Douglas's own wife said he, quote, reeked of sex when she picked him up from work. She called the coroner's office because she thought he was having an affair. Yes, he technically was. So they did the sting operation and, well, you know the rest.
Oh, man. Can you imagine the whole, like, the setup for the sting? They're like, okay, we're going to get some coffee and we're going to go on a stakeout. Who are we hunting? This guy who fucks bodies, like dead ones. What?
One of you is going to have to go really, really deep undercover.
Okay, we need to set him up. We need a body for him to want to fuck. I nominate Johnson.
Come on, Johnson, with that ass, you were asking for it. Let's go.
Well, I happen to think that necrophilia is the one and only truly victimless crimes.
Well, there's the families who are suing the coroner's office and Douglas himself for violating their loved ones.
Okay, when I say victimless crime, I mean there's no blame that isn't somehow tied in with the sacred aspect of a dead body or any sort of religious rest in peace thing. I think if you just go by the logic and leave like the magic out of it, it's a completely victimless crime. The person is dead. A necrophiliac is not hurting anybody. Now, if he was killing people, so then they'd be dead, and then he could have sex with them. That's another thing. That is bullshit. I will not condone that, hippies. Necrophilia is a victimless crime. If you just view dead bodies as something that was once alive but now has died, and if you don't think of it as a vessel or pod, I'm not sure what everybody believes, but it's just a dead body, practically. So... And they're not hurting anybody, so let them do it.
She's not using that vagina anymore.
I'd say there's very, very little risk of pregnancy. I mean, there's the Jurassic Park Nature Finds a Way thing, but there's mostly no chance of pregnancy.
I wonder...
Jeff Goldblum coming up in here going, life will... It cannot be contained. Life would be... can't like, him just, like, muttering.
I wonder... Can you get STDs from a corpse? Or do you think he do you think he I mean, obviously they found his semen, but do you think he ever tried safe sex with them? And I can't believe we're going down this road, but whatever. We're already here. We might as well enjoy it.
Are you kidding? With how insane condoms have gotten, I jerk off with condoms now. They have, like, all kinds of weird tingly lube and, like, bizarre shapes and everything. I'd be surprised if he didn't use a condom. I mean... I don't want to get too crass here, but, I mean, chafing would be an issue after a while. I mean, you gotta, a condom is the easiest thing.
I think the most surprising aspect of a necrophile is that, Charlie, I think you can attest, it's difficult to keep an erection when it's cold. Can you imagine cold packing?
Yeah, that's, I mean, maybe that's part of it. I don't understand what makes someone a necrophiliac. Like, I don't understand what the psychological seed of it all is. But maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's really they're just a bunch of cold fetishes, and it's a means to an end.
There is somewhat of a larger question here. Douglas is not the only one being sued by the families of the people, the corpses he raped, and they are calling it rape. I don't know, because they never technically said no, but whatever.
It could not have been consensual. That's the one thing.
That is true.
I mean, unless there was some sort of a dated letter, it would have to be like notarized and everything.
Well, but the bigger issue is the families are suing Douglas and the Hamilton County Coroner's Office. Now, the Coroner's Office is saying, we didn't have any part in this. Yeah, we didn't catch the guy for 20 years, but we didn't play any part of this. We're not liable. Do you think that this should, that the families, I think they should be able to sue Douglas. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Do you think the Coroner's Office is off the hook here, or do you think they should be liable?
I think if they had a case against the coroner's office, but I don't know. I think they would have to investigate to figure out if the coroner's office actually knew anything or not. Because them saying, oh, we had no idea he was doing this for 20 years, is a, you know, I wouldn't believe that right off the bat. And I think it would take some little bit of investigation, a little bit of time and effort to figure out if they should be sued or not.
Well, I think it's very likely that the coroner's office or the building that it's located in has an insurance policy against trespassing and breaking and entering. So if that's the very likely case, then this whole thing just goes...
And you know what? I just thought of this. I wonder if he had to sweet talk those women or if he... I mean, was there any foreplay? God damn it! Now this is in my head!
I'm sure there's a porn out there that will answer all of these questions if only we knew what it was called.
It's called Are You Necrophilin' Me?
Well, that's a perfect segue. Hey, Charlie, remember when we talked about the L.A. condoms-only law and how we were both shocked that it actually passed? And remember I had a theory that this was going to drive the porno industry either underground or to New York or Las Vegas?
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever forget that. It was just such unfocused effort.
Well, I was right. It's both been driven underground. They're no longer getting permits to shoot condomless porn. And a lot of them are fleeing to Las Vegas. I called this one, even though I didn't think the law would pass, I called it. Since Charlie and I talked about this, Kat, what do you think about, because in L.A. now, it is required if you're shooting porn, you have to use condoms. You know, we've discussed that with the gay thing. Do you think that it going underground and moving to Las Vegas was inevitable with this?
Yeah, I guess probably Las Vegas makes more sense than other places. Yeah, absolutely. When you do something like this, that is going to be so detrimental to the business has to do its business somewhere else.
Its business in someone else's business.
Yes.
They had to know this was going to happen. Is that kind of what they wanted, to push porno out of L.A.? Because all they did was force it underground, which now it's unregulated. I think they made it more dangerous for shooting porn now, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, they've definitely made it more dangerous shooting porn just because of all the risk involved, and because a lot of people are now doing it out of spite just because they don't want to comply with the regulation that they don't agree with. However, I have a silver lining for you guys. It's still only the second worst way to get paid for sex in Las Vegas.
Fair enough. Well, we got one more of this segment. I saw this in the pilot episode of Nip Tuck. I didn't think people actually smuggled cocaine in breast implants through the airport. Were they doing this before the show, or did they get the idea from the show? Because a 43-year-old woman was arrested in Mexico. It was found out that she had 4 pounds of cocaine hidden inside her breast implants. Which came first?
Oh, hell if I know. I can tell you as a woman that 4 extra pounds on your chest is not going to feel good at all.
I was going to say, Charlie, if we were smuggling it in fake junk, 4 pounds is a lot, isn't it?
Is it, Josh? Yeah, I think the whole plan was fucked. I just think that's a really stupid idea because, I mean, okay, if you're smuggling cocaine through an airport, don't put it in a pair of fake tits, because every male TSA agent, when they see a pair of fake tits, they say, excuse me, come here. Yeah, we're going to have to pat you down.
Well,
guys, come on over here. Get your phone out. Guys, come on.
The only reason that they even noticed her, she was acting nervous. They noticed her nervous demeanor, which says to me, this would have worked if she could have remained calm.
Well, I mean, a lot of the airports nowadays have those, like, body scans that you have to go through. Well, I mean, still, a lot of airports have these things now. So she might have had to eventually go through one of those.
Would you be able to tell, though, that that wasn't whatever the implant is? Because it was liquid cocaine, and silicone is not that different consistency. I don't know if it would just look like regular breast implants, really.
I have no idea. I just know that would be really heavy.
That's a lot of cocaine, by the way, too.
That's 2 pounds of tit.
So
now, I've done a lot of independent research on the subject, just never with a scale, so I'm not an expert on how much tits weigh. I just think that would be just too cartoonish to even pretend to to try to get away with it. It's just such a bad idea. I can't believe somebody actually tried this thinking it would work.
Hey, anything more than a mouthful, you're just asking for a blowout.
I'm just thinking about how much her back and shoulders must have hurt.
I'm thinking more, okay, if you're going to do this, then she had to have the cocaine put into the implants and then put into her. Then she would have had to have them surgically removed upon her arrival in Mexico. It's kind of a limited thing. You can only do that so many times, can't you?
Thus her nervous demeanor.
Yeah.
She's probably like, ow, I'm in pain.
Yeah, I would think, because normally when a woman gets breast implants, there's like a downtime, you know?
There is.
There's a, like, healing moment. There's a healing period.
You can't wear a bra, and if your tits are going to be that big because...
4 pounds.
Because they're 4 pounds, I mean, I don't know. It does not seem comfortable at all. I certainly wouldn't want to travel that way.
I just think this is funny that I saw this on a TV show and went, totally unrealistic, and then when you see it in the news, you go, wow, all right then.
I'll shut up now.
All right, I guess that wasn't as... I mean, it worked in the TV show. That's probably the most unrealistic part at this point. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's all the heavy topics. Oh, boy. I got something to say,
Welcome to the heart attack portion of What the Fuck, I'm Heart D. Fisher. And of course, Josh Hadley is present as always.
Always. You can't get rid of me.
Guys, we have one hell of a barn burner hour-long heart attack. We talked to Mike Bluehair, who's on the ground in Ferguson, and his videos that he's posting on his YouTube channel are mind-blowing. But one of the things I want to get into right now, we're going to talk, I think I've mentioned this before, about how here in Los Angeles, we are dealing with one of the worst droughts in years and years and years, all right? So it's a major, serious drought happening in the state of California. And if I go out, we're recording this on a Thursday, and if I walk out my door and I turn on my water and I water my front lawn, I can be fined $500, all right? Think about that. If you water your lawn on the wrong day, you could be fined $500. But if you're Nestle or the golf courses or the American energy companies and you're taking 75% of the groundwater out of the Colorado River Basin at a time when American West is facing a record drought, well, everything's okay if you're a corporation, but not if you're a human being. Pretty fucked up. Have you heard about this, Josh?
It's more this corporate personhood shit where if we give it that a corporation is a person, then why aren't they subjected to the same laws as us? Why do they have freedoms above and beyond that of an actual person?
Yeah, they've got Nestle has two plants on the Colorado River Basin that take in water to bottle and sell under its Arrowhead and Pure Life brands. Remember that, guys. Arrowhead and Pure Life brands. Okay, one is in Salida, Colorado, on the eastern edge of the Upper Basin, and the other is in the San Gorgano Pass, halfway between San Bernardino and Indio, California. According to annual reports filed in 2009, Nestle bottles between 595 to 1,366 acre-feet of water per year, enough to flood that many acres under a foot of water from the California source. That's right, guys. When water is not being used on farms, when farms are being forced to shut down, when cows are being sold off of their ranches to other people in other states because of this drought, but for Nestle, it's business as usual. These scumbags, they're saying that altogether they believe that Nestle is draining the Colorado River Basin of anywhere between 250 million to 510 million gallons of water per year, according to the acre feet to gallons conversion calculator. I want you to wrap your mind around that, folks. While a regular human being is not allowed to water his lawn on the wrong day, and farmers are not getting their water to grow food, Nestle is allowed to take between 250 million to 510 million gallons of water per year.
Of course they are, because they're special, Hart.
This river basin is responsible for supplying municipal water to 40 million Americans. Now, if you want to know where I'm getting this article, I want you to go to Occupy.com because they've got a lot of very well-researched information up here, and you too can read it yourself, source the links, go through it. Do the math, man. Do the math. Connect the fucking dots. It is time for us to stop arguing about Miley Cyrus's tongue, about feminazis, and about you shouldn't have said this and you shouldn't have said that because they're gaming the system and they're fucking us, folks. Nestle, with its 29 water bottling facilities across North America, pocketed about $4 billion in revenue from bottled water sales in 2012 alone. Can you wrap your head around that, guys? They walked away with $4 billion in revenue from bottled sales in 2012 alone, all from taking our public water that belongs to you and me. But I'm not allowed to get it because isn't it in Colorado, one of those states where you're not allowed to collect rainwater?
There's actually multiple states where that's true, but Colorado may be one of them.
That's right. That's right. Because according to the United States Golf Association, 2 million acres of American golf courses are irrigated, or 80% of the country's total golf course acreage. Between 2003 and 2005, they estimate that 2,300,000 acre-feet of water was used to maintain golf courses, amounting to over 2 billion gallons of water per day between 2003 and 2005, guys. So that rich white golf course is getting their water, which I'm sure is owned by a corporation. And it's not alone there. There are other bottled water people playing this game. They're not the only one. It's not just the golf courses. They're looking to privatize our water resources. These people, Peter Brabeck, chairman and former CEO of Nestle, has openly said, and I quote, "Access to water is not a public right. This, in spite of UN Resolution 64/292, which declares that water and sanitation are both basic human rights. The World Health Organization has said that one person needs 20 liters of water for, quote, survival levels of use, including bath and laundry. If you're a French-based company like Suez, they're using a New Jersey-based subsidiary to prepare to buy out Detroit's water infrastructure. That's right. A French company is going to come in, and they're going to buy Detroit's water infrastructure through one of their sub-companies with the potential end goal of privatizing the Detroit River and the Great Lakes. A French company thinks they're going to come into America and privatize the Great Lakes. Well, guess what? Now the corporations can buy politicians with no limits on how much money they could spend in political campaigns. Well, guess what? They can just buy whatever politician they need. So if that Chinese company needs to use public lands for a solar farm or a wind farm and fuck American ranchers, they will, because those politicians are bought and paid for. Let's say you've got a subsidiary of a giant French corporation that wants to come in and buy out Detroit's water infrastructure, and they want to privatize the river and the lakes. Are you fucking insane? But guess what, guys? We live in an insane world where our politicians, they don't respond to us because we don't vote anymore. We don't pay attention anymore. We don't take participation in our governance anymore. If more regular people got into office, we don't all have to take that government tit. We don't all have to get on that bribery train. You and me and guys like Josh and everybody else, this Mike Blue Hair, all change comes from the streets. It all comes from us. We have to get up off our asses and make a difference. Like, I did a video just recently. I was challenged to do the ALS challenge, and I know I hit Josh up for it too. And I did it because Prophet, the lead singer of one of the bands we work with, well, his fucking mom died from ALS. So I didn't do it because it was a fad. I did it to help raise awareness for ALS, most commonly known as Lou Gehrig's disease. So that's part of why I did it. Now you got these assholes online that are running around saying, what a waste of water, the ice bucket challenge, you're wasting water. Well, how about you assholes take those big mouths and go after Nestle? How about you go after your politicians that allow these corporations to suck us dry? How about you start pending some of that anger at them? But no, the safe target is to complain about something safe, what they did this week on S.H.I.E.L.D. The safe target is for you to get online and get all upset about what Miley Cyrus did today, because you're too much of a pussy to do anything about what's really bothering you. But I believe in more. I believe in better. I think you're stronger than that, America. I think you're better than that, America. I think the people in Ferguson are showing us something. I think they're standing up. Because what is that riot in Ferguson really all about? It's not about stealing. Nestle is stealing from the public. They are stealing our lifeblood, our water, oil, gold. But the people in Ferguson, what did they do? They said, I'm tired of these officers shooting our people. We have had enough. We feel we need a change. So what did they get? They get a giant police presence. That's why you guys are afraid to talk out. That's why you guys complain about Miley Cyrus bitterly. That's why you never, never post about the real things and the real threats. But our backs are against the wall, folks. It is time for us to deal with what is real.
So, Charlie, you lost a friend, or you had a friend shot in the Cinemark shooting back in on July 20th, 2012, what we call the Aurora shooting. And
that is, although I did not lose a friend, Caleb is he's actually making a very good recovery. He's on stage again.
Glad to hear that. So since you're the one who brought this to my attention, they were the families of the victims that were shot at Aurora were going to sue Cinemark Theaters for not having enough security. Now, initially, it was thrown out of court, or it looked like it was going to be. Just this week, it came back down that, no, a judge thinks this can go to court, that it was Cinemark's responsibility, unquote, to have better protection at the Dark Knight Rises screening.
I'm really just sort of two minds when I first read the story. I saw an AP article in the paper this morning in Pueblo, Colorado, and I was just really kind of flabbergasted because I really feel bad for the families, and I know they want closure, and I know that there are medical bills just going completely out of control, and I know that they're looking for a way to, you know, to help the survivors, because there were 12 people killed, but there were a lot more people wounded. And so I understand why they're wanting to do this. I really don't want them to. I mean, it's not that I don't want them to have closure or help in any way. I just think this sets a horrible fucking precedent, and I don't want this to happen, because this is what I was originally afraid would happen when this first happened back in 2012. I didn't want movie theaters to become like prisons. I didn't want worse yet, airports. I wanted to keep movie theaters the same. Going to the movies is one of the only things that I have left that can make me happy for a couple hours at a time. And I just really think, oh my God, this could go so bad. I mean, if it gets combined into a civil action suit, if the plaintiffs win, then, oh my God, not only are movie theaters just going to completely change forever, but there's no going back after that. And not just movie theaters, but any place where there could potentially be a threat will be an airport after 9/11. Just armed soldiers walking around all the time in case some shit goes down. I don't want to live that life, man.
I think Cinemark should not be held responsible because it's not their responsibility. What are your thoughts on this for the families or for Cinemark?
I'm in the same mind here as Charlie, where it's really not fair to sue the location for something that a patron did. I don't know if there's any kind of rule or anything, but basically they can't be held responsible for something like this. I mean, it's not their job to provide any more security than the law requires. A lot of places have, you know, a cop in the building on a Friday and Saturday night. And God, if you need more than that, then it's ridiculous. Like maybe having a metal detector or something, you know, might seem like a good idea, but you don't have enough people to enforce this. Movie theaters pay people shit. They don't make that much money.
That is a true story.
I've worked at a movie theater. I know that firsthand.
They can't afford to enforce this kind of stuff. Now, if you want to pay $20 for a ticket and $30 for a popcorn and a soda, hey, absolutely. We'll get right on staffing it with extra security 24/7. But it's not feasible because no matter what kind of laws or, you know, protection you try to put in there, it's going to cost way more money than it is ever going to, you know, need.
Part of their argument is that Cinemark should have known. Obviously, they couldn't have known that a madman was going to jump into the room and start gunning people down. But part of their argument is Cinemark knew how big of a movie this was going to be. It knew how large of a crowd it was going to have, and they should have had security on hand, which could have possibly prevented this. That would be like saying, you know, people get trampled on Black Friday at a Best Buy. Well, it was Best Buy's responsibility. They should have had armed security guards to stop the trampling. They knew this could have happened. That's ridiculous. That's saying it's the facility's responsibility to deal with the eventuality that people are fucking stupid. That should not be.
People are stupid. People are evil. People are insane. This, what's happening now, like trying to sue Cinemark because they didn't have the proper security measures, people are just trying to control every aspect of life through laws, through the
It's a Batman movie!
Exactly. The movie is going to be big. You're either going to show it or you're not. You can't control what happens when people come to see it. It can't be done. And trying to control life like that through lawmaking is, I mean, it's fucking up the quality of life for everybody. Like I said, I don't like the direction this is pointing in.
So, Kat, you live, how far away from Ferguson are you? I know you're pretty damn close.
Ferguson is in North County of St. Louis, and I live in, like, pretty southwest of there. So, I'm, like, 30 minutes, maybe 40 minutes away.
How much of this nonsense has spilled over into your area?
Nothing has actually invaded, South County, per se. A few of my friends have been personally affected by what's going on. It's not happening in our area. It's like when we go out and go someplace, then we might see the results of it somewhere else. But South County is just too far away for any of this to spill over.
Well, now I'm going off a USA Today timeline article here. So you being closer to this, please correct me if I get any of these details wrong, okay?
Okay.
What basically happened was Michael Brown and a friend were walking down the street. They're both black, and a white police officer pulled them over. Now, there's a little bit of discrepancy over why he stopped them. There are two different versions of what happened. The officer says Michael Brown and his friend took a swing at them, and he was forced to shoot at both of them, and he ended up killing Michael Brown. Now, obviously, the friend who survived, he says the officer just came out and started harassing them and basically you know, get on the ground, nigger.
The police side of the story is that he opened up the car door to get out to talk to them, which I'd like to think he was probably harassing them, but whatever. That the guy, that Michael Brown, you know, shoved him into his car and they were wrestling over his gun. And subsequently the gun went off.
And see, one of the reasons I don't buy that, the gun went off 20 feet away. Michael Brown was 20 feet away from the cop when he was shot. That's not wrestling for the gun and it goes off.
Wrestling for the gun inside the car where he was shot at least once in the car. And then he backed off once he had realized he'd been hit and put his arms up in the air, and then the accounts differ again. Some say that he started to rush the cop again. I mean, either way, I think the gun went off inside the vehicle. At least that's the cop side of the story.
I don't think it's relevant whether the officer was harassing Brown or if Brown was wrestling for his gun. At this point, that's irrelevant. What is relevant is what happened after the fact. So Michael Brown, being unarmed, gunned down by a white cop, and being black, they had, like, you know, a prayer vigil for him and whatnot. And somehow, maybe you can fill me in on this, Kat, that prayer vigil spilled over into riots where rioters ended up burning down a Quick Trip after looting it. And then after that, things just seemed to spiral more and more out of control. Take it, Kat.
Okay, I don't know how the rioting and looting started. It's a huge, volatile situation where there's a lot of people gathering together. They're all pretty angry. And I think just some bad people took advantage of the situation. There are rumors that the looters are not from Ferguson. There's some that saying that they're just taking advantage of the situation and driving into Ferguson, you know, just waiting to see if they can get some stuff out of it. It's a really just awful situation that made things even worse, naturally. And apparently that QT was family owned by my friend's family. So they're kind of upset, needless to say.
Well, and see, here's part of my problem. Okay, you feel anger at the police. Like I said, at this point, it's irrelevant who did what. Just a black man was killed by a white cop. So you feel anger and rage. How does burning down a Quick Trip, how does raping a woman, I read about a rape, how does beating people, how does looting other buildings, how does burning buildings down in your own neighborhood, how does that help the situation at all? To me, this is opportunism at its worst.
It absolutely is. These people are not protesters. They are just taking advantage of a bad situation, and they don't care. They don't care about that kid. I say kid, he was 18. They don't care about that guy or that guy's family, or that that guy's family really wants peace right now. And he wants people to be calm and collect. But no. All they care about is how can they get away with stealing and put it under the cover of something else.
I think this happened. This is sort of a dynamic that's evolved between the three of us. I think whenever you two disagree on an issue, I sort of have a pragmatic approach. And I think you have two survivors, both witnesses. You give them both lie detector tests. I mean, I know those aren't 100% effective, but I'm surprised that's not the first thing people do.
From what I understand, there was already some racial tensions in the area because from what I've read, Ferguson is between 73 and 78% black, with an almost completely white police force. Historically, that does not end well when it comes to fairness. From what I understand, the racial tensions had been building up for a while, and this was just the flashpoint. This is like the LA riots all over again. This has been going on for nights and nights. The National Guard has been called in. Every night there's been riots. There's been a curfew laid down. The FBI is now looking at the initial shooting case. And more looting has been going on, more beatings and rapes have been going on, and the cops, one cop, Huffington Post had the video, one cop was caught on audio talking about how these niggers should just learn their place. Then you've got how the media is covering this. The media, obviously Fox News, was saying, well, you know, he should have just listened to the police, and that's what you get when you get in with the police. The liberal media is saying this is just one more example of police powers run amok and completely out of control. But then you've got the media on the ground. The police are harassing local media. There has been seven different reporters that have been harassed, beaten, or shot at by the police after they've identified themselves as media. This is spiraling out of control. Am I right, Kat?
It's more in control now than it was the first couple of nights. What we have is a whole lot of bad people thrown into volatile situations. There are violent protesters and there are bad cops. There are bad people on each side. So some media portrayal of the protesters is that they're all peaceful. They are not all peaceful. These are not all 100%, you know, hands in the air, nonviolent protesters. There are people throwing Molotov cocktails at the cops. Cops are getting bricked. They're getting bottled. They're, you know, it's not pleasant being a cop here either, but there are a lot of really, really bad decisions being made by these cops. They are, you know, or they have been using rubber bullets and tear gas and all this other stuff. And a lot of really nasty cops out there saying a lot of bad stuff.
A lot of it caught on tape by these same reporters that they're harassing. Al Jazeera, yes. America was actually shot at. They had tear gas shot at them. And then the cops went and started dismantling and smashing their equipment until they realized an MSNBC crew was catching them on tape doing that. Then they, oh, no, we were just protecting their equipment. We didn't want them to get hurt. Bullshit.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. Basically, they took all of the county police out of the situation and brought in the state highway patrol. And now the state highway patrol is running the show and things have been much, much better. The guy who is in charge now has actually been, you know, like marching with the protesters and, you know, trying to be one of the people and everything. And that actually has made things much, much better because there has been a lot of really nasty things said about the police in media. And, you know, some of it's true, some of it's really not. And so the whole town has had this sort of fuck the police attitude. And so having the police presence in Ferguson was actually just making it worse. People were seeing the police there, getting angry, and then getting angry very specifically at the police, and they were basically just clashing, and no side was really handling it particularly well. So they brought in the state highway patrol, and it's been a lot better, but they did institute a curfew last night, and things got bad because of that.
There's also one other element, and this does involve the media. that is I think wanting things to get worse. Because as you said, things were calming down. We're recording this on a Sunday night. As we're recording this, things are relatively calm. Then steps in Reverend Al Sharpton, whipping up the racial tensions about how this is just one more symptom of a racist police force and a racist system, and how it needs to be completely torn down. When I listened to his speech on TV, it sounded almost like he doesn't want this to calm down. He seems to be stoking the fires, seeing if he can stir the shit up some more. That is not going to help the situation either.
What's killing me is that all of this stuff, this fuck the police, all of this attitude of they're not having an honest conversation about what's at the heart of the problem. And they're not going to at this point, because nothing that, like, these protests, they're fine. But when they institute a curfew saying, please go home at midnight so we can, you know, just have the state highway patrol here protecting the businesses, and people refuse to disperse, and then they get violent and try and shoot people, and then the police have to respond, you're not going to solve any racial problems at 1:30 in the morning when there's a fucking curfew. Like, a lot of this stuff just isn't helping. And the family of this dead person are trying to say, hey, stop this stuff. It's not helping. We're losing track of the main issue. And people are like, la, 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 I'm going to keep doing whatever I feel like doing. And honestly, the situation, I mean, it's in better control now, but it still could get worse.
I can't think of anything that I've talked about on this show that has not been made worse in some way by the media. I think human beings are unmatched in their ability to overreact. Maybe, okay, like a dog when you run the vacuum, but other than that, human beings overreact to everything. People are going nuts before we know what happened. I think the priority, I think what everybody should be focused on and keep their fucking shit together until it happens, is an investigation has to be done. The truth has to be known, because without knowing the truth, people are just acting from their gut, trying to draw attention to a cause, trying to shape the way people are thinking, or just trying to draw attention to themselves.
Al Sharpton is a leech. He's a leech on society. And that's not because he's black. It's because he's a leech.
Al Sharpton is not known for his predilection for open discourse. Okay, he's one of the biggest overreactors in American history, I think. So yes, I think the media is definitely making it worse. However, this does have all the makings of a John Grisham story. I mean, because people may never know what happened, but the way people are reacting to it and the way it stirs up all kinds of hate, the real wrong thing that happened is the way that we're handling this will be the moral of the story. I'm not going to read the book, but I will see the movie that will probably have Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey. It will win one Oscar, but not to do with the movie. It'll be for the song that Bob Dylan does for the soundtrack.
I think it would be insulting if you have a movie about this and the only Oscar is won by a white guy.
That's about right.
and he would play the cop that shot the kid.
Exactly. And the movie terrible. Would make him a sympathetic character.
Oh my God. But, speaking of sympathetic, there is officially, as of like maybe a couple hours ago, now people trying to raise money for the officer's family. And there's like, there are people protesting and rallying on behalf of the officer. And I'm like, great, great. You know how you could make this situation worse? How about you do that?
Well, the police already started doing that the day before we record this, when they gave a press conference. They gave the officer's name. They didn't whitewash it, but they went out of their way to paint Brown as a potential gang member and that he was a suspect in a robbery at a convenience store. Police are trying so hard to say, no, 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 potential gang member here. Honestly,
well, okay,
I think
the local media isn't doing that.
The national media is. The national media is very much doing this. Ironically enough, the liberal side, too. I don't get that. I would have figured that would have been a Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity's thing, but I guess that would just come naturally for them. As it stands, when we're recording this, things are relatively calm. By the time this airs, it could be complete chaos. Now, you're both younger than me. I remember watching the LA riots on TV every day when that happened in, what was that, 91, 92?
It's 92.
This is reminding me of that this could get that bad.
I think a lot of people are really on edge about it. I think when they changed over to the State Highway Patrol, things have gotten much, much better. There are people still looting and rioting. That was two nights ago, as of the day we record this. Almost want to say I don't think it's going to get worse. I think it's going to get better. I have no basis for that thought, but I think
it's your hope.
Yeah, it really is, because I think after last night and people having to get tear gassed because of shots were fired and it wasn't rubber bullets and it wasn't the police firing. I think people are like, no shit. Okay, now people really are trying to shoot up cops, you know, for no reason or whatever. I don't know. We don't really know yet.
I did notice one thing. The first night that this all happened, I was watching a live stream from your local ABC affiliate, Kat. And I noticed while there was the white anchor in the studio, the cameraman and the reporter were both black. I thought, probably a wise move.
Yeah, they talk about race and race and race and race. And you honestly, you don't see any white protesters down there, because like, I think on the first night that it happened, a white guy got pulled out of a truck and I think was beaten just because he was white while they were
Jesus,
telling him.
This is the LA Riots. That's Reginald Denny, isn't it, Charlie?
Reginald Denny. Goddamn.
And that's the only thing that I've heard about where like white people were basically said, fucking keep out of this. This is a black people problem. There is a certain amount of racism that does come into play here. It's systemic. It's built into the way that the city is segregated. It's awful.
I would say
it's
on
there.
Both sides too. The black people don't trust the white people any more than the white people trust the black people.
Right. And it's not what the issue is. The issue, I mean, it's part of what the issue is, but the main issue is really how the police are responding. And that's, I think, probably where we should focus a little bit more of the tension, but it's everything is just taking attention away from the kid who was murdered and putting attention to other things.
Well, I don't like to think of it as being bound to blow up sooner or later, even though I kind of do think of life like that. I don't know. I think the media is making it worse. I think Al Sharpton and Fox News are making it worse. People are making it worse. Protesters are making it worse. Everybody is doing all this shit before an investigation has been done. Like I said, I think that should be the priority, but because this is what life is, it's not the number one priority. Being the loudest about it is the number one priority for way too many people. And I think they now finally outnumber the people who are like, well, yeah, but do we know what happened yet? It's weird that that's the minority opinion. That's what's making me sad about this whole thing.
It's a bad situation all over. A lot of mistakes have been made, and I don't think enough people are learning from those mistakes, which is why this shit just keeps happening night after night. We would rather listen to our own point of view than actually go, oh, hey, you know, maybe this was a bad idea. A lot of bad people have taken advantage of the situation, and I'm really hoping, really, really hoping it gets better from here, because it's really not good. I do think this was a situation that was bound to happen eventually, just because St. Louis is St. Louis, and we're not a city that was ready for it to happen, because we don't really have things like this happen here. I think it really sucks for everybody, because, you know, basically a line being drawn in the sand, either you support the protesters or you're supporting the cops. And if you support the cops, then you're racist and you hate blacks. And if you support the protesters, then you're okay with them looting and doing all this other stuff. And I think people are forgetting to see everybody else as humans. And I think we really need to stop and remember that these cops are putting their lives on the line every day, and they deserve to be treated with respect, even though some of them are assholes. And these protesters have legitimate issues that they are trying to bring up, and they're being treated like dogs, and that's not okay. And nothing about this situation is okay.
Very well put.
Although I will say, if this story has a tragic ending, then it will win an Oscar. If it has a happy ending, then Golden Globe, probably.
I want you to stay safe, since this is so relatively close to you. Where can people find you to make sure that you are safe?
Not in North County at all. But you can find me over on Twitter at LabyrinthCat and Facebook.com/NerdistCat. And you can find me on my other show, Nerd to the Third Power, over on That Guy with the Glasses under the podcast tab.
Charlie, since you're in a different state, no one cares about your safety, but where can we find you anyway?
Well, you can find me at my local Cinemark Theater, walking around with the club busting fucking heads open, just in case. Also, Twitter, Facebook, geekjuicemedia.com.
And you can find me at 1201beyond.com and contact the show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. And hopefully Kat stays safe, and hopefully we're not talking about this next week, because hopefully it did not get worse. Try and have a good night, and if you're in St. Louis, Jesus, don't go looting. Just listen to our show. It's better than looting.
If you live in St. Louis on purpose, then you kind of have to share the blame, though.
Oh, yeah, sure, I know. It's a free country, and I ain't got the right. But I got a badge. What do you got?
Freedom! Right, that's all we have!
Fuck is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.